Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, January 24, 2018. The UNMISS chief calls on the warring parties to adhere to the cessation of hostilities deal.
We're disappointed that this has occurred. I guess in some ways it's not necessarily surprising. But as I say, the most important thing is the parties to the agreement adhere to the agreement.
And thousands of former rebels are integrated into various government forces.
We are going to deliver a good service to this country. The rest we are putting on, as I'm a brigadier now, it is not because I went to the bush. It is because I listened and I accepted the peace.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The IGAD Special Envoy for South Sudan has set February 5th as the date for the resumption of the second phase of the High-Level Revitalization Forum aimed at addressing issues in the collapsed 2015 peace deal. The head of the UN mission in South Sudan says he's concerned about the failure of the warring parties to respect the cessation of hostility agreement signed in Addis Ababa last month. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Article 2, subsection 1 of the cessation of hostilities agreement states that each party shall implement the agreement in full and in good faith and shall ensure that its affiliates and all forces or armed groups under its command and control at all times observe the agreement, particularly the provisions on prohibited acts. UNMISS Chief David Sierra told the reporters in Juba today that the parties have done a little to abide by last month's agreement.
In some places, there's been skirmishes and allegations made by each side about who started the conflict. We're disappointed that this has occurred. I guess in some ways it's not necessarily surprising. But as I say, the most important thing is the parties to the agreement adhere to the agreement, not just in word but in reality on the ground. We stand very strongly with the rest of the international community in condemning any party that initiates hostilities in violation of the cessation of hostilities.
The agreement requires the warring parties to stop all hostile military actions, including attacks aimed at dislodging fighters, capturing territory and each other's equipment or ambushes. The agreement also prohibits the warring parties from using proxy militias to provoke or attack one another or to enlist more fighters. Sierra is calling on the warring parties to retreat and focus on resolving their differences during the next round of peace talks scheduled to take place in early February.
Let's pull back, let's refrain, exert some tolerance, and let's see the peace process make its way towards a future that South Sudan can enjoy rather than have to endure as parties go to war.
12 warring parties signed the cessation of hostilities agreement in Addis Ababa. All committed themselves to fully implementing the deal. Although Sierra did not mention any parties by name that have violated the agreement, the government and the SPLA-IO faction allied with the former First Vice President Riek Machar have accused each other of attacking others' positions. Cabinet Affairs Minister Martin Elia Lomuro accused the rebels last week of attacking government positions in South Lech, Yei and Amadi states, among others. Lomuro claims government has documented 31 incidences in which Machar's group attacked government positions. He also threatened to throw peace monitors out of the country if they continue to accuse government forces of violating the agreement signed in December.
We'll go until IGAD to either empower citizens to work properly or to use the regional protection force, which is doing nothing here, after they gave us a lot of headache, threatening us of arms embargo, threatening us of travel ban on individuals, freezing assets of individuals, and now they are quiet. They are here. Let someone tell me, what is the RPF doing in this country? What are they doing? Use them to bring peace in this country, or let them go back. Or they should hand over the role of citizen to UNMISS. Because UNMISS is also doing nothing here, other than POCs, patrolling water with tanks on the streets, moving at a speed of almost 0 miles per hour. causing congestion. I'm telling you, we want peace in our country, and this time we want to take control of our country. We cannot have it all with by people just saying, using us and criticizing us when in fact they are here doing nothing.
Colonel Lampol Gabriel, the deputy military spokesman of the SPLA-I of Faxon loyal to Machar, claimed recently that government forces attacked their positions in Lol, Yei, and Kapoita states. Meanwhile, the Ceasefire Transitional Security Monitoring Mechanism, or CITISAM, the body charged with monitoring and investigating any reports of violations by the parties, has accused the government and SPLAIO of continued attacks. In its latest report, CITISAM says the SPLAIO, led by Machar, attacked Koch on December 24th, resulting in the killing of civilians in the area, a clear violation of the ceasefire deal. The monitoring group also says government forces intensified their activities between December 22nd and January 8th south of Mundri, an area controlled by the Machar-led SPLA-I of Faxon. The ceasefire agreement was supposed to create a favorable environment for the next round of peace talks scheduled to begin next month. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Authorities in former Western Equatoria State say more than 2,000 former fighters with the South Sudan National Liberation Movement have been integrated into government forces. That includes the army, police, wildlife, and prison services. A ceremony marking the event was held in Yambie Budue State yesterday, as we hear from Gift Friday from Juba.
After receiving training for more than a year, the ex-rebels were integrated into South Sudan's regular forces. Presidential advisor Tut Gatluak, who signed the agreement on behalf of the government, presided over the graduation and integration ceremony in Yambio. Brigadier General Abel Matthew Banga, who represented the former rebels, said the event marked the coming of peace to Budoy State.
We assure you we are going to deliver a good service to this country. The ranks we are putting on, as I'm a brigadier now, it is not to be because I went to the bush. It is because I listened and I accepted the peace.
Banga says there are no longer any National Liberation Army or SPLA-IO rebels in Budoy State, only government forces. He says armed men should not be allowed to terrorize civilians. Speaking in Arabic, Presidential Advisor Gatluak says the government is committed to implementing the April 2016 agreement.
A message from our brother Akol Kor is that from this occasion today, everyone should now greet one another. We are telling the people of this state, we don't have any problem with you again. You should take care of your states and your people in your various areas of redeployment.
Gatluak called on all former rebels to work for peace in their areas of redeployment. Budoy State Governor Daniel Badagwe Rimbasa says his government will ensure that the state remains peaceful.
Mark my quotation, peace is the only battle worth waging, and we are going only to use peace to fight now. Time has come for us, the people of South Sudan, to own our peace. The peace we need in this country, we will be the drivers of the peace. No one will do it for us. We will do it by ourselves.
Badagwe says his government is open to dialogue with any other armed groups that are yet to lay down their weapons.
I also need to warn all of you, as you get out today, there are anti-peace in this country. Some of them may be even within the state or outside the state or neighboring countries. You be very careful. I don't want the people of Budoy State or Greater Western Equatoria again to be misled. No one should use you, the people of this great state, especially my comrades, for their own selfish interest.
Yambio resident Justin Otovra praised the government for integrating the former rebels into the armed forces.
I'm very happy for the government of the Republic of South Sudan for the hard work to bring those boys home. As before, we normally don't have any access to go to our farm, but these days we have access to go to our farm and even to go to the schools and register our children.
President Kiir ordered the integration of the former fighters into the government's regular forces late last year and promoted some 140 fighters to various ranks in the country's organized forces. The audio used in this story was recorded by Yambi FM journalist Baraka John. Gift Friday for VOA News, Juba.
A South Sudan diplomat at the South Sudan Embassy in London, who is not authorized to speak to the media, told South Sudan in Focus that The embassy in London is closed because the government in Juba failed to pay rent in arrears dating back to August 2017. The spokesman of the South Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Ambassador Mawin Arik, denies the embassy in London was closed on Tuesday due to lack of rent payment. He says he is yet to receive the closure notice from London.
We are aware of the difficulties that the embassy has been going through as regards to the obligations that are needed for that embassy to carry its duty, including the rents and other things. But that it has been officially closed, we haven't received that yet, but we are aware of the difficulties that are around there.
Yeah, there are reports that the embassy received a notice of closure from the landlord, and as we speak now, the embassy is closed. Your diplomats in London are staying at home.
Well, we have to wait and receive that official notification because you need to send us that letter, that, yes, send us the keys of the embassy, so that we are able to officially know that it has been closed. But as I speak with you, we haven't received that notification from the embassy. So hopefully, if it is true what you are saying, then we will surely receive it.
And when was the last time the government of South Sudan paid the rent for that embassy in London?
You know, we have been having difficulties of some of the obligations that we are doing, not only in London, but in some other different embassies due to the situation that the government is in and the country is in. But we are trying to do our best so that we are able to pay the arrears that are needed by the landlords, places that we are renting embassies.
You're talking about difficulties that your embassies are facing abroad. What are these difficulties?
Financial difficulties.
And why is that so? I see that your government delegations are traveling all over the world. Last week, your president was in South Africa with a delegation. In December, there was a huge delegation in Addis for the revitalization talks. I mean, these people use money to travel. Why would you not pay for the rent of your embassies?
They are not traveling every day, as you may be talking now. They are not traveling every day. They travel when we need them to travel. But these obligations that we are paying for embassies, these are permanent obligations that we need to pay every month. And because of the financial situation that the country is in, you may be aware, the payment has not been going through as we need it. But still, we are committed to be able to pay the arrears. So with the landlord that are working with us, it is okay. If we are late 1 month or two, then we government still have to pay them so that we continue our rent. We don't want to close embassies, but you know there may be some delays due to these difficulties that I'm telling you. But that also are being handled by the government.
What is the priority of your government?
Well,
the travels or your embassies?
What I'm telling you, those travels are not every day or are not every month. They come once in a while, and they can, you know, you cannot compare it with something that is to be done every month. And so nobody is traveling every day or every 2 weeks or every month. You know, it comes once in a while.
Can you give us the head count of some of your embassies that are experiencing problems?
These are administrative issues, and as I told you, some of the embassies that we still experiencing the same problem that you are talking about are being handled by the government, including the one in London. And so it depends on how the landlord of the premises that we are renting is cooperating with us and whether that person can, you know, give us his time so that we are able to pay the arrears. But as I told you, this is applicable to some of the embassies, and we are also handling them. So it isn't necessary that I count them one by one.
Yeah, the rent issues is one thing, and then there is also another problem of your diplomats who are representing the country outside. From my understanding, most of them, if not all, have not received their salaries for almost a year.
This is applicable to what I told you earlier with the financial situation that the whole country is in. These payments that you are talking about are made here from South Sudan, and have you also seen here, the officials in the government here also in South Sudan are not getting paid now on time due to these difficulties.
That's Ambassador Mawin Arik, spokesman of the South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. He was speaking to me from Juba earlier today. South Sudanese working for the Kenya Commercial Bank in South Sudan are into a second day of their sit-down strike to demand a pay rise. An official from the Ministry of Labor says the bank's management has continued to defy a government order to improve the working conditions of their staff. Nabil Biajo has the story for VOA from Juba.
Kenya Commercial Bank employee Sarah Court says she and her South Sudanese colleagues decided to go on a strike because their salaries are too meager compared to the high cost of living in South Sudan.
Our salary cannot maintain us for the whole month. We have been striking all these years, but nothing, by just keeping quiet. But the salary we are getting cannot maintain anyone. With that, why we are striking?
South Sudanese staff at KCB are paid their salaries in South Sudanese pounds, unlike their expatriate colleagues who get paid in U.S. dollars. Employee Peter Ajak, who is also a member of the National Staff Association, says the bank's salary structure dates back to when the South Sudanese currency was strong, long before the political and economic crisis hit the country. Ajak says the average monthly salary of a clerk is 3,000 South Sudanese pounds, equivalent to about $1,000 back before hyperinflation hit. Now it's less than $20.
We are demanding for our rights because now the standard of living in Juba is becoming costly. We cannot afford the basic needs that we want. Our children are not studying, and we cannot continue with life this way. So we need the management of KCB Bank to look into our issue so that they give us commensurate payment.
Ajak says the corporate bank managers have not been friendly to the South Sudanese staff or considerate of their situation.
We feel exploited and humiliated sometimes, and they always put the government as the scapegoat for our suffering, because whenever we complain, they say it is your government, and they blame everything on this crisis.
Ajak says every time they speak up, the South Sudanese staff has been fired. The Undersecretary in South Sudan's Labor and Industrial Relations Ministry, Mary Hilary Wani, says the KCB management must respond to the demands of its national staff. Wani says when staff at Kenya Commercial Bank went on a strike the first time in 2016, her ministry tried to intervene.
The fact that these workers, since 2016, have been pursuing dialogue with the management to look into the situation and to see the difficult conditions they are passing through as national staff, the management has not been responsive, and they have not taken the necessary steps to improve the living conditions of their staff compared to the other banks.
Wani says other banks in South Sudan pay staff far more than KCB Bank. South Sudan in Focus obtained a letter in February 2016 by then Labor Minister Ngor Kolong Ngor, directing KCB management to not fire any national staff for participating in the first strike. The letter also called on the bank's management not to discriminate between South Sudanese staff and Kenyan staff in terms of payment of emergency allowances following the dramatic change in the dollar exchange rate. The letter advised management to resolve the standoff with the staff amicably. But when he says bank executives dismissed the advice.
They did not show any respect to the labor authority in this country. Of all the points that we have drawn up, we discussed here in my office with the KCB management, and our minister advised, a letter was sent to them advising on the specific points that they were supposed to address. But I'm really very much disappointed in the KCB management that they did not carry out what we had wanted to do. They went ahead and dismissed staff because of their participation in the strike.
Repeated calls to reach KCB management for comment on this report have gone unanswered. A senior manager at the bank told South Sudan in Focus today that the management team has been engaged in a series of meetings, but only the managing director is authorized to speak to the media, and the managing director was not available to comment. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biajo in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at poaching in South Sudan. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the first thing you look for when you come home?
When I come back home, I see the people at home, if they are fine or not. And second thing, I see my mom, if they finish the work or not. If they want to sweep the room and everything, that if no any work, I just sit with my mom.
Yes, I first have to eat after, and then I see what exactly happened at home in my absence. Then after, I look into the book.
When I reach at home, I first to remove my clothes away and I'm looking for my food. Because I'm come there, I'm too hungry. I will look for my food and I eat and I take something to do.
Well, when I come back home from the school, the first thing I can remove out my clothes, then I look for the lunch, then after food, I can take rest for a while.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Wildlife authorities in Jonglei State say they have arrested 7 people, including 3 soldiers, for poaching. The wildlife conservation and tourism chief in Jonglei State says the suspects were caught red-handed in boat transporting illegal bush meat last night. Dengai Deng has details for VOA from Bor.
Wildlife Conservation and Tourism Director Zakaria Atim Manyok says game wardens confiscated a pickup truck full of bush meat, 2 motorcycles and 3 AK-47 guns. He says the poachers will soon be arraigned in court to face justice. He stressed that wild animals are national resource and should never be killed, but if they are, poachers like the ones arrested last night will face the full force of the law.
They were actually apprehended. 4 of them are here. 2 police personnel armed and 1 soldier sergeant from Division 8 and the others. And we have highlight our communities in Jonglei State in particular and Greater Jonglei that poaching was completely forbidden, but they have actually attempted today to do this one. And this is why we are here. These game wardens are ready to ensure the law in this dry season. We will never actually forgive anyone who has committed atrocity against our animals, and you know the importance of our animals.
Manyok says the confiscated bush meat will be burnt and the poachers will be tried in a court of law. He admits that poaching is rampant across the state and says both civilians and soldiers are guilty of poaching.
We are actually mandated by the Parliament of South Sudan and the Wildlife Conservation and National Parks Act 2003 is ensuring and stipulating in Chapter 51, no one should attempt to do this one. Therefore, we will continuously apprehending these people until our people will understand the importance of our wildlife.
Anyang Maler, one of the suspected poachers in detention, says he did not know that wildlife should not be hunted. Speaking in his native Dinka, Maler says he went to the forest to hunt for bush meat to feed his family.
We kill wild animals for food because they are valuable food for us. Is there any food here in South Sudan? We can find no food while insecurity everywhere. The government say we cannot kill wild animals. Let them first stabilize security so that we stop killing wild animals and go to the farm.
SPLA soldier Ngong Anyang is another suspected poacher being detained. Anyang says he too killed wild animals only to provide food for his family.
I did not kill animal to go and get money. No, it is not my intention. So I kill as a food. So when I reach the bush, I get animal and then I kill it as a food.
Manyok says hunger is not an excuse for killing wildlife.
The parliament can approve if there's nothing for our communities, but that is not there. And this is why I stand firmly against such things. Wildlife is not a food for people to actually satisfy the needs of people. That is unlawful.
Resident Duot Dao says the government should establish game reserves to protect wild animals. Last month, wildlife officials in Jonglei State warned South Sudanese against killing animals for food, as hundreds of thousands of wild animals in Boma National Park began their annual migration in search of pasture and water during the dry season. The Sud wetland in South Sudan, which is fed by the Nile River, are home to Tiang antelopes, Mongala gazelles, and white-haired cock, which migrate from eastern to western Jonglei State during each dry season. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Recent comments by U.S. President Donald Trump about Africa angered many African leaders, but not Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni, who says he loves Trump's blunt honesty and thinks the United States has a great president. Halima Athumani has more for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
President Yoweri Museveni got legislators from the East African community laughing when he said he loved U.S. President Donald Trump. Earlier this month, President Trump allegedly called Haiti and some countries in Africa an expletive while discussing the subject of immigrants going to the United States. While some African countries, such as Nigeria and South Africa, reacted by summoning U.S. ambassadors to explain the insulting comment, Uganda's Museveni instead had praise for Trump.
America has got one of the best presidents ever, Mr. Trump. I love Trump. I love Trump because he tells Africans frankly. I don't know whether he's misquoted or whatever, but when he speaks, I like him because he speaks frankly. The Africans need to solve their problems. They need to be strong. In the world, you cannot survive if you are weak.
Museveni is not the only Trump fan in Uganda. Local radio presenter James Onen, who is known for his controversial comments, says many Africans believe their countries are the word Trump used because many of the best and brightest flee the continent for better opportunities. He thinks, however, that Museveni's comment was ironic. After all, he says, if African countries are bad places to live, is not that the fault of those in charge?
So it's almost an admission of his own failings. But secondly, I think President Museveni also is being strategic. He understands that by being in the good books of Trump, it might mean better things for him and less problems for him down the road.
Uganda's representative to the East African Legislative Assembly, Susan Nakauchi, agreed with Museveni's comments but says the challenge with Africa is that it does not have opportunities such as Western countries.
We should not leave outsiders to come and try to provide solutions to us. Because when you give them that opportunity, they come with their stringent conditions. So all these people would come to us with all these favors and whatnot. They expect something in return, maybe in terms of investment. So I entirely agree. Africa is full of very smart people. Only that we don't have sometimes the opportunities that our people in the first world do have.
Museveni may have praised Trump for his comment, but Uganda's Speaker of Parliament, Rebecca Kadaga, did not let the comment slide. While meeting the U.S. ambassador to Uganda, Deborah Malak, on Tuesday, she asked what Trump meant by his uncomplimentary remarks. Ambassador Malak described the comments as disturbing and upsetting. Halima Athmani for VOA News.
My money, my body, now your own.
Is that real, buddy?
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Eve by Davido.
If I tell you, say I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Yeah. Versace and Gucci for your body, oh baby. No do, gotta, gotta for me. My number one is tutu, sipping bruku tutu, for your love is tutu. I go tutu tutu tutu, because I be a nuju. Say you do me juju, cause I'm feeling the juju.
We have been listening to the video with the song Eve. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to know what you think about this show. You can send us an email at southsudan@voanews.com, or you can check us on our Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
If I tell you, I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Versace and Gucci for your body, oh baby.